offering our most loving pranams at Bhagwan's Lotus Feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Afternoon Satsang. As always, joining you from our studios in Prashanthi Nilayam is Prem and Arvind from Team Radio Sai. This week and the week that follows, we'll be talking about a general topic. The last fortnight we started the satsang on Conversations with Bhagwan Shri Satyasai Baba, a book documenting Swami's conversations with Dr. Hislop. So this week it's an opportunity to pick a very general topic. And we've picked up a theme which is quite recent in the sense of when Swami's story comes into play in this particular topic, but it's a topic which draws back to a very, very long time ago. It's another episode in Swami's life. If we look at, there is much to learn from, there is much to understand Swami's ways of working and the inspiration that we can draw from that. And that's one of the reasons why we are talking about, we are going to be discussing on this theme. Apart from that, this is something which was very dear to Swami and something we were all fortunate enough to be around and witness even as it was panning out. This is about one of Swami's major water projects. We know about the first water project that Swami did for the Anantapur district, and thereafter he extended it to the districts of Mehbubnagar and Medak. But this was a water project which came much later. And again, like most other projects of Swami, this took everybody by surprise, including the people who probably were involved in the logistics. We're talking about Swami's water project to the city of Chennai, which was earlier Madras. And this is one of the very, very beautifully executed and very immense projects that Swami had announced and concluded. And this was, there are a lot of beautiful stories relating to that. We thought we'll talk about this particular project in this week and the week that follows. But before we do that, as always, let's pray to Swami that he gives us all the understanding that whatever he has done is a message for all of us. As Swami would say, his life is his message. So in that sense, let us not relive this merely as looking back at events that have passed, but look at it as something that we all can draw lessons from. And we pray to Swami that he gives us that insight. Let's invite Arvind to join all of us in this journey to talk about the Chennai Water Project. Sairam Arvind.
Sairam Prem, whenever we pick up a theme like this about a certain project or a certain event, it becomes a little difficult, if I can say so, to stick just to that one topic, theme or event or project. Because for instance, the Chennai Water Supply Project has got at least 4 or 5 visits of Bhagwan to Chennai, which was formerly known as Madras. It was in 1996 that Madras was renamed as Chennai, but that's only as far as the official records and maps go. A lot of people still refer to Chennai as Madras, and Bhagwan, we know for sure that till he left the physical, he would always refer to it as Madras. I don't think Swami ever called that city as Chennai.
I recall a very small incident which happened in Trai Brindavan, which was probably, 99, when the new name had just come, when Swami asked one of my classmates which city he's from, and he said Madras because he knew that Swami was familiar with that name. And as Swami usually does, he was walking by and Swami looked at the boy and asked, "Where are you from?" And he said Madras, and Swami literally stopped, he turned back and said Chennai. said, you're politically wrong, literally, emphasizing that you got the name wrong. But I think those are a few incidents far in between.
Okay, so that is the first time I'm hearing that Swami referred to it as Chennai, but definitely in public discourses, I don't think he ever called it Chennai. He kept calling it Madras. So anyway, there are multiple visits of Bhagwan associated with this Chennai water project. But if we look at even those visits that Swami made to Madras, it's not as if they were made with respect to this project alone. Even if you look at the earliest visits or even the final last visit, which was directly connected to this, that is in 2007. Even at that time, Swami actually had been to Chennai for the Atirudra Mahayagnam. So that's why I say it's a challenge, because when we take up a theme like this, we have to go through all these different leelas and mahimas of Bhagwan and somehow actually select and pull out the threads which tie up only this project. because Bhagwan is the master string puller. He is able to achieve multiple tasks and multiple things with a single action, with a single word, with a single thought. So, therefore, when we are actually studying this one project, dear listeners, we have gone through the different experiences, different incidents, different episodes, different visits, and try to separate and pull out only those threads that are connected to the Chennai Water Project, the Madras Water Project, drinking water supply project. But even after doing that, I cannot promise that Prem and myself will be able to stick only to this, so there will be those occasional detours. But those detours are definitely wonderful. But at the same time, we also promise that we will not take so many detours that we will not be able to complete this theme within the 2 weeks that we have planned to do it in. So with that kind of a disclaimer, I think we should go into possibly Swami's attachment, or if I can use that word, attachment, to the city of Madras. Because as Prem said, when Swami announced that he would be doing a water project for Madras, it really seemed like a bolt from the blue. It seemed like to materialize from nowhere, because Anandpur water project made sense because it was the home district for Bhagwan. It was, and that too in Anandpur, the region is called Rayalaseema, meaning the place with endless rocks. And Swami would often allude to that in his discourses and say that this Rayalaseema has become Ratnalaseema, which means the place of endless diamonds. That's how the land has been rendered fertile and people have been uplifted by the water project. So in that sense, logically it made sense that Swami did the Anandpur water supply project. After that, similar kind of situation existed in the districts of Medak and Mahbub Nagar, and we had devotees from those districts actually coming and requesting Swami to help them also. So it was more like a prayer that was made and Bhagwan answered, and the Medak and Mahbub Nagar projects came. Out of the blue, the water project to Chennai really, on the face of it, took everybody by storm, had everyone shocked in the sense pleasantly, surprised, taken aback. But at the same time, later on, retrospectively, when we look at it and think about it, it's not as if that Madras cropped up in Bhagwan's mind one fine day. Even since the 1940s, Bhagwan seems to have had a very, very close and intimate relationship with this city of Madras.
Absolutely. And before we move to Madras, even as you were saying about, you know, the idea of doing a water project for Chennai prop up in Swami's mind all of a sudden, maybe a little detour, as you gave the disclaimer, we are not going to strictly follow to Madras, it's impossible. We are only going to strictly stick to Swami, and that's the only thing we can promise. You know, Brother Sudhindran, you know, he was one of our seniors. He was narrating this incident once. This was before Swami had done the second phase of the water project in Andhra Pradesh itself, the extension to Mehboob Nagar and Medak. And this was in Thrai Brindavan, and he was also there when Swami was talking to, I think, Mr. Ramakrishna of L&T and Mr. Kondal Rao, who was one of the pioneers in Swami's water project. And I think few other members of the trust were also there. And he was there. He was the only student. He was probably in his second year undergraduate or first year undergraduate or something like that. And Swami was talking about how he was very happy with the way the work has progressed. And it was just completed. And it was handed over to the government. And Swami was talking about all of that. And all of a sudden, none of them in the room expected Swami to ask this question. Swami suddenly said, "So where shall we do the next project?" Swami said, and everybody was blank. And they said, "Swami, whatever you say, wherever you indicate, we'll do that." But Swami wanted the answer from the group, so he kept on asking everybody, "Where do you think we should do it? Where do you think you should do the next one?" And suddenly Swami looked at Brother Sudhindran, who was sitting at Swami's feet and probably doing Pad Seva. And Swami said, "Hey, you tell me, where shall we do the next water project?" And he looked up at Swami and he said he heard himself say the word Medak. And he said till that point he never knew that there was a place called Medak, or there was a district called Medak anywhere around. He had no clue of that. He had not heard it from anybody. It was not in discussion. It was not being discussed there. He said, "I just heard myself tell this name Medak, and I was wondering what a weird name that is."
So it is almost like We say, you know, theoretically we say Bhagwan is a script writer, but here is a practical experience of the same.
Right, absolutely. And he was saying, what a weird name is this? Why did I think of name? You know, it doesn't even sound like a place. And Swami said, oh, that's a good idea. We should do it in Medak district. Swami said, even there, they have a lot of water problem. And, you know, can you imagine we are talking of something like this? Did it occur to Swami out of the blue? It does not occur out of the blue, even in the presence of Swami in somebody else's mind. You know, it is all orchestrated in that manner. So in that sense, you know, this is, as Swami would say, none of it happens. I mean, it might be a surprise to us. It might be a miraculous beginning might be there. But for Swami, it is sahajam. It is all there. It is there in the womb of time, as they say. And, you know, we just see the manifestation when it is.
But what is ascharyam for you is sahajam for me. Exactly. That is how Bhagwan would say.
Going back to Swami's association with the city of Madras, it's really a very, very long time ago, because we had the opportunity to speak about it, and we spoke of how Swami's travels began, and the first city to be blessed by Swami's visit was, of course, Bangalore, which was closest to Puttaparthi. Then I think Swami then made a visit to Hyderabad, right? That was the second major city to receive Swami, and then Swami visited Mysore, and from Mysore, Swami made the first visit to Chennai in the December of 1944. That's a very, very long time ago. So December of 1944, January 1945 was around the time when Swami made his first trip to Chennai, and that shows what a long association Swami has with Chennai. And I think we had spoken about a devotee by name Navaneetam Naidu, one of the first few hosts of Swami in the city of Bangalore.
And I remember him as the person who gifted Swami with a dog, a Pomeranian dog.
Right, exactly. The two brothers, I think they were there. One, all of them, Rao and Naidu.
That is Jagannath Rao Naidu, right, and Narasimha Rao Naidu. That is two others.
Their friends, I think his friend through them had come was Mr. Navaneetam
At their
Naidu.
Home for their bhajans when he had come, that's how Navaneetam Naidu.
Right, so Navaneetam Naidu's, I think, brother-in-law or somebody was in Chennai, and Swami was being hosted by him. And it
in
was
fact, right. At the whatever. Let me just repeat it. This Navaneetam Naidu's incident is so beautiful because he, being in a high position, I forget the exact position. He was in a high government position because of which he had a telephone at home, and that itself was considered a big thing of honor and pride. You know, again, a detour in a detour. I was just reading an article written by Dr. Iyer of our super speciality hospital, and he was saying how in 1994 or 5, when he came and joined the super speciality hospital in Puttaparthi, the first thing that happened was he was given a telephone, and his wife felt very proud and happy and thrilled because it was like an object of great honor, you know, you've got a telephone at home. So he said that later on only she repented having celebrated it, because he would keep getting calls anytime in the night also. So that is about the telephone. But yeah, so if that was the case in a place like Puttaparthi in 1994-95, then just imagine in the 1940s to have your own telephone. And Swami was staying at Navaneetam Naidu's place, and one night he just walks out of the room. And Navaneetam Naidu is actually upset with Swami coming, because he would always keep out of the house when Swami was at home. It was his wife who was a devotee of Bhagwan, and she would keep inviting. And I think the wife was the real home minister in the case of Navaneetam Naidu, and so he couldn't stop Swami from coming. So it was only after Swami retired in his room that he would actually return home. But one night, in the middle of the night, Swami comes out of the room, and he gives the details of a particular patient in Bombay in a certain hospital, and he says how, you know, it was very complicated, but Swami said, I went and did this and it got solved. Now I think I'll go and take rest. And when Navaneetam Naidu heard this, he was not able to believe his ears, because he knows Swami is locked up, or not locked up, he's holed up in this room over here. So he immediately placed a trunk call to Mumbai, to Bombay. I mean, those days it was Bombay, again it has become Mumbai now. So he placed a call to this very hospital to inquire about this patient whose name Swami had mentioned. And he, to his utter amazement, it was exactly the same thing that he heard from the nurse there about what had happened to the patient, and that is how he actually became a devotee of Swami. And after that, he opened up his home, his hearth and his heart also for Bhagwan to occupy. So it is not a surprise that soon enough, when Bhagwan went to Madras, he went to the home of somebody related to Navneetam Naidu.
Right, and even as I'm saying that, he went in 1944-45. Actually, there are some records of Swami visiting the city of Chennai even before that, 1943. And there's another lady who says that Swami visited and stayed in their house in 1942.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's all that can be said is it's a very, very long association. And, you know, Swami has been visiting that city for the past so many decades.
And, you know, it also makes sense because, see, in after Swami declared avatarhood in 1940, after that, we know how Swami's mission almost, like, took off. On with the beginning, it was the construction of the Patha Mandir, and slowly all these things happened and it became like an organization. It kept growing. Now, we know that, and I think in our series in Satya to Sai, we have covered some parts of it where, you know, the land was registered, the mandir had to be registered and all these. Now, for all these dealings, this is the pre-independence days, before India actually won its independence right. from Britain. So, that time, this Anantapur region, in the district in which Puttaparthi currently resides, is currently there. This Anantapur was, there was no state called Andhra Pradesh.
Right.
This division of the states in India based on language happened, I think, much later.
Yeah, post 1950.
1950. Yeah, it happened linguistically. They were broken into different parts. Before that, it was like the kingdoms and erstwhile states. So that time, Anantapur happened to come under the Madras Presidency. Madras Presidency was something that the British had established. I think there was Mysore, which was one big state. There was mm-hmm. Madras, which was a big state. And this Madras state, I think, extended as far as, this will make sense to those who know the Indian map. It extended as far up to Orissa, if I'm not mistaken, starting mm-hmm. from South India. That was the extent of this Madras Presidency. And therefore, the headquarters for any kind of government dealings was at Madras. And it makes logical sense that since Bhagwan had to do so many registrations and such things, he would have had to travel to Madras even for official purposes many times.
Right, and I think it was one of those early visits was when Swami visited even Loknath Mudaliar, whom we have spoken about. And literally the first temple for Swami, if at all anywhere, even if it was conceived, it was to be in Madras. Mm-hmm. Because Loknath Mudaliar wanted to build a temple for Swami in the land that he had in Guindy. It was mm-hmm. Swami who actually told him that don't build it for me, build it for the earlier form of my advent. And that's how he ended up building a temple for Shirdi Baba. And we know that Swami visited there for the groundbreaking, for the inauguration, and many, many times after that. So, right, the overall idea is that Swami has been visiting the city of Chennai for the past so many decades. Apart from that state itself, you know, around Madras, Swami has been visiting all of these places. We know that Swami would, most of his summers were spent in Ooty or Kodaikanal, which were all around, you know, the city of Madras, close by to Madras. And most of the devotees from Madras were the ones who were managing all of these places where Swami used to stay and host a lot of students also.
You know, speaking of Madras, I'm reminded of two incidents whose exact dates I don't have,
mm-hmm.
but these are two incidents that I've heard Swami himself narrate in Trai Vrindavan and in some discourses, different parts during different occasions, both connected to Madras. One is about how he would himself drive to and from Madras. Swami would say to all of us that he would drive a Morris Minor car, and he would drive it at breathtaking speeds. And one occasion he jokingly mentioned how Sheshagiri Rao, mm-hmm. who was also one of the first priests
right.
of the mandir, would sit with his eyes closed next to Swami, chanting Sai Ram, Sai Ram. Because right. Swami would say, one thing is he would drive fast. Second thing is, Swami would sometimes sit cross-legged on the seat, take his hands off the steering wheel, and all this would cause palpitations and, you know, almost heart thudding for Sheshagiri Rao. In fact, Swami would say that once we reach Madras, I would put my hand on Sheshagiri Rao's shoulder and tell him, now you can open your eyes, we are in Madras already. And he would thank, he would be thanking God knows whom, because his Lord was right beside him. But you know, when I think of the metaphorical aspect of this narrative that Swami would say, once we hand over the wheel of our life, of our journey in life to Swami's hand, we need not worry. We can just do what Seshagiri Rao did. Close our eyes, have no fear, and chant Sai Ram, Sai Ram. Because I think it is the safest, and whether he drives slow or fast, or whether he holds the steering wheel, or we feel that he has let go of the steering, there are times in our life when we feel that. That Bhagwan, you have let go of control of my life, because my life seems to be veering here and there and going all over the place. Whether his hands are on the steering or not, whether his feet are on the brake, accelerator, clutch or not, if we are sure that in the driver's seat we have Bhagwan, we can just be happy and thrilled and sit closing our eyes, happily doing Namasmarana, because he will drive us safe to our destination. And like he would do to Seshagiri Rao, he will pat us on our back and say, child, open your eyes, we are there already. Now, this is what I would think of when Swami would narrate this. Of course, when Swami would narrate it, we would laugh and enjoy it. Another thing that Swami said which is very interesting is that visit to the Marina Beach. I think Marina Beach is a very famous and popular beach in Madras. And Swami would narrate how during some calamity, some floods or something that had happened, many film stars would actually do their fundraising on the Marina Beach, because of which a lot of people would come to the Marina Beach with the hope to catch glimpses of movie stars.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami would say that once when he was in the car, he would say that my lips were red because of the paan that he would chew. And of course, Swami's hairstyle is very, very different. You cannot say whether it's a man's hairstyle or a woman's hairstyle. And Swami wearing his sunglasses. Swami would say that there were some people who would mistake him to be a heroine, a film actress. And they would come trying to peep into the car. His host would have to, one time host was Hanumant Rao, whom Swami often refers to. He would have to drive them away and say that, no, this is not a film actress. Again, this was something that would elicit smiles and laughter from all of us. Swami being mistaken for a film actress, not an actor.
Swami would say that. Swami would mention the name of an actress. Swami would say, people mistook me for Vaijayanti Mala. Swami would say.
After all, he is the one who dons the Vaijayanti Mala, isn't it? He is the Sai Krishna.
In fact, in one of the Trai sessions Swami did that, Swami was saying, this was not Chennai visit. Swami would speak about his first few trips to Kodaikanal in the early 50s and 60s. And Swami would say that he had to wear a headscarf because it was so cold.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami would say that was one of the reasons why they mistook Swami for an actress. And Swami took his handkerchief and Swami wore it around his head, and Swami said, I used to wear it like this.
Oh, we have seen that photograph also. Yes. Wow.
Right.
So that's how, that was what had happened at Marina Beach. So these are two incidents that I remember, you know, Swami saying. And you know, look at, even when I think of this incident where Swami said he was mistaken for a film actress, I was thinking how times change, right? Those were the times when people would go in search of film actors and they stumbled upon Swami. We have not been there to see those times, but we have been there to see those times when we have come to see Swami and we have stumbled across so many, not only film stars, sports stars and political stars, how many stars in which galaxy we have seen. You realize that this is what happens when the one who has created the actual stars have come on earth. No other star is worthy of admiration, because they melt into nothingness in front of Bhagwan, who is there like the Surya Koti, like the 1 crore suns beaming his grace, effulgence, radiance and love.
Now, talking about Swami's driving to Chennai, there's another very beautiful incident. I think you mentioned it even during Satyam Shyam Sundaram. Again, it was a very important event in Swami's life because of another devotee. This was, I think, when the Bukkapatnam school was becoming a higher secondary school.
Mm-hmm.
The school where Swami had studied, and they wanted to expand it, and it becomes one of the registered government schools or whatever it is. And they come to Swami and Swami promises to help them put up the structure and all of that. But in between, they come and say that the same time another school has been approved in Kottacheru.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some issues because of which it was too close to have two schools, approved schools. And, you know, there was a scare of Bukkapatnam losing out in that. And Swami promises them that, you know, he will ensure that Bukkapatnam gets the school. So Swami drives to Chennai all the way, overnight, starts on morning, drives throughout the night, reaches at 4:30 to Hanumant Rao's house, the devotee whom you are referring to, who was actually a secretary to the Ministry of Education at that time. So he promises that he will ensure that Bukkapatnam gets the license or whatever it is at that time. And we all know that for the inauguration of that Bukkapatnam school was when the Raja Venkatgiri comes for the first time to Puttaparthi.
And he's accompanied by Kasturi, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so. I think maybe Kasturi's first visit, because all of this was after Swami's first visit. I mean, they saw Swami for the first time in Bangalore, I think in 48, 49.
Correct.
So when we might look at these as small incidents, but these are all very, very important events when we look at Swami's life itself, because all of these people have played such a huge role in Swami's life.
At this point in time, dear listeners, we can go on and on, because there are multiple visits that Swami made to Madras. Possibly, we'll go through one little visit to get an idea of how Bhagwan's day would be at Madras. But after that, we will come to that one important visit where possibly we can spot the genesis of the Madras Water Project. But all of that we'll have to wait for after the break. We'll take a quick little break and greet you on the other side of the break. So don't go anywhere. Keep listening.
Thank you. பரம் பொருள்
எல்லாம் அழித்திடும் பரம் பொருள்
எல்லாம் அழித்திடும் பரம் பொருள்
எல்லாம் அழித்திடும் பரம் பொருள் வருவாயே.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We have picked up the Chennai Water Project, the Sri Satya Sai Ganga Project, for discussion over these 2 weeks, and we spent a little happy time thinking about different visits that Bhagwan would make to Chennai, to Madras, right from the early 1940s. I was just looking at, for example, you know, in 1983 Swami made a visit, 1984 Swami made a visit, 1990 Swami made a visit, 1990 I think 4 or 5 he made a visit, 97 he made a visit, and that was a very significant visit in 1997 because that was the last visit for almost a decade after that. But before we go to that, you know, generally whenever Swami would visit Madras, there were definitely some Balvikas meets that would happen, some medical camps. For instance, in 1999, apart from that, Swami would inaugurate mandirs here and there, bless and consecrate mandirs here and there. For instance, in 1990, Swami inaugurated the Sarvadharma Dhyana Mandapa at Vellore. And then at Kalasha Palyam, there is a Shirdi Baba temple where Bhagwan went and lit the dhuni there. Speaking of Shirdi Baba temples, there is this Gindi temple that we have spoken about. Almost every visit when Swami went to Madras, he made it a point to visit this Gindi temple and do something there, you know. Once materialize some chakra and put it, once do something, some miracle or the other would happen. Mm-hmm. So that's a very amazing temple.
And Sarvadharma Stupa Swami inaugurated there.
Exactly. Yeah. It is still there to this day, and I feel any of our listeners who is visiting Madras for the first time should definitely make it a point to go to Gindi, because that place has hosted Bhagwan a dozen times, and it's a very, very special place.
And Swami has done the, what do you call
Prana Pratishtha.
Prana Pratishtha, where the statue
instilling
itself,
life in the idol. Right,
and the statue itself levitated when Swami did that.
Right. So, that is the thing. And another thing that would often happen is, Madras today is a very, very huge city. But in the earlier years, it was a growing city. So, there were large portions of Madras that were well developed, and large portions of Madras that were not well developed. So it was a city with contrasts, where you have the richest of the rich, at the same time you have the poorest of the poor. This is what typically happens in most of Indian cities, at least. You have both ends of the spectrum there. So Swami would kick off and inaugurate multiple seva projects, little ones, at different places in Madras. For instance, in 1990, that is one sample visit that I have picked up, Swami went to the Tirumangalam slum, which had been adopted by the Anna Nagar Samiti. He also went to the Bharati Nagar slum, which had been adopted by Mambalam. He also went to the Ayyappakam slum, far away, in a near a place called Ambattur. So, though the visit was just 5 days...
Don't you say far away now, because all of that is in the middle of the city now. The city is growing so much that, you know, some of those which were considered as villages outside of Chennai has become part of the city right now.
The same is the case even with Bangalore.
Right, exactly. It's the same way.
Every city.
Today, Whitefield is very much a part of the city of Bangalore than it was when Swami used to visit.
Absolutely.
In the 50s and 60s.
And I think that's a very important point. We may not be stressing too much on it, but it's an important point because this is one of the main reasons why the load on Madras for drinking water or any water grew so much, because it has grown exponentially. All the cities. In fact, Bangalore is one of the cities that receives wonderful rains. It's right on the collision course of the southwest monsoons.
Mm-hmm.
The moment the southwest monsoons cross Kerala, they come to Bangalore. And therefore it receives plentiful rain. Even then, it is in such a precarious situation now that if its annual rainfall reduces by something like 15 to 20% also, there is a severe water crisis. So one of the main reasons for such crisis happening is the way, like the you know, unimaginable and uncontrolled manner in which the city has grown far too huge for itself. It's almost become like a cancerous growth. And yeah, that is what had happened to Madras also. But Otherwise, this is how generally a Swami's visit would pan out. The 1990 visit was a little interesting one because Swami had taken along with him all the MBA students also.
Right.
And with regard to that, I remember an incident that Satish Babu sir, mm-hmm. who is currently the warden and a head teacher in the higher secondary school, he used to narrate. I think it is this visit only, or it might be another visit where Swami took the MBA student with him. But I think it is this visit only. So he was narrating to us how, you know, Swami promised the MBA boys that if they study well, he will take them to Madras. He will take them to Madras, and they were all very excited. And as the excitement kept building, Swami said, "You should study well, do well in these exams." So they were very, very keen to do well in the exams, and they did pretty well also in that exam. And then Swami came and he told them that, "You see, you have done very well, but your teachers told me," and he named the teachers, and he said, "They have said that you have not done well, so I don't want to disobey them, so therefore you are not coming to Madras." And that was the year they were not taken, and they were very, very upset and with the teachers for having said like that in spite of them getting good marks.
Mm-hmm.
The next year, of course, Swami took all of them, but it was at that time they realized that Swami is the person who has actually called the teachers and told them, "You, when I ask you how they have done, publicly tell that they have not done well." So you know, the Lord, when we say he's a string puller, he does everything. Success is his will, failure is his will. And these are little incidents which are funny when we hear it now, but I think they have got a very, very profound message, because in our day-to-day life today also, not just in our personal life, even when it comes to satsai organizations and Swami's mission, we look at things and feel that things are going wrong. At that time, we of course do what we are supposed to do, what is our duty, but at the innermost level in our heart, let us never forget that not a blade of grass moves without Bhagwan's will. It is all his doing. We just have to accept and celebrate his uncertainty.
Talking about Swami's early visits, I recall seeing this beautiful discourse, which I think it's part of one of our repositories, where Swami is speaking to the students in the Institute auditorium, if I'm not wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be the setup where Swami is talking of one of his visits to Madras. And there he's saying that one of the samitis which had taken up the slums and, you know, some of the districts which are bordering the city of Madras. Swami is talking about one of the service projects they were doing there, when water scarcity is not new to the city of Madras, and Swami is saying that this particular place there was water scarcity, they did not have any groundwater.
Mm-hmm.
So Swami's devotees had gone there, and Swami, they wanted to try digging a well. So all the people in that particular place, they said, "Sir, we have tried all kinds of, you know, digging. It doesn't work. There's no groundwater here." And they said, "It's okay. We'll give it a shot. We'll take Swami's name and we'll dig." So they located a spot and they did. And Swami is narrating this whole episode to the students. Swami said, "You know what? They told Sairam, and they keep digging that well." And within a short distance, maybe 100, 150 feet, Swami said, you know, they found a lot of water, and so much water, and not just any water, sweet water. It was like readily palatable water. So Swami was saying that they were so thrilled that the next time when I went to Madras, they came to invite Swami and take Swami in that procession to that particular place. And now Swami said in the Purna Kumbham, they brought the same water to invite Swami. And, you know, so Swami's water project started much before the real water project started, I guess.
I think this kind of a water project that Swami did was like an external manifestation of what he has been doing constantly on the in the level of the heart. You know, it reminds me that if we actually look at the political system in Tamil Nadu, I think I'm actually jumping the gun here now. Let me not go into that. Let me go back to what we were discussing about Swami's visit in 1997. That happened to be the last visit. During most of the visit, Swami would see the shortage of water that people were suffering from. In fact, in one of his discourses, Swami narrates how when he was once coming to Madras from East and West Godavari districts, so in that route comes the Red Hills Lake, a lake that had been made by the British people. If you don't mind, I'll go a little bit into the history. So it was the British who actually made this city of Madras, and usually any city is established on the banks of some perennial river, because water is the most important resource that you need for a civilization to grow, for a city to grow, a town to grow. That's why if we look at all the major cities in the world, they are mostly located on the banks of a river.
All civilizations have thrived established on, right.
Whether Mesopotamia, Indus Valley, all have been on banks
Egyptian,
of rivers.
Right.
Yes. So, Madras, but what happened was, this happened to be the place where the British first landed, and therefore they grew it, they developed it, and that became the city. So it became a city simply because the British landed there, not because it was on the banks of any river. So therefore it was in dire need of water even back then. I think it was in the 1650s, 1640s, I don't know the exact year, but in the 17th century when the British actually landed in Madras. So, from then itself, there was a water problem, and they decided to bring water to the city from a non-perennial river. You know, there was this non-perennial river which flows only during the rainy seasons. I think it's called Koshasthalayar.
Right.
Koshasthalayar River. So, from the Koshasthalayar River, they, whenever it flows, they would bring the water and store it in this Red Hills Lake. And then they built multiple water tanks in the town and city, so that from this Red Hills Lake, water can be diverted to all these places and the city can be supplied. So this is that Red Hills Lake that Swami saw when he was coming back from, coming to Madras from the East and West Godavari districts. And when, then Swami asked about it. You know, Swami knows everything, but in the conversation, Swami asked, what is this water body about? They said, Swami, this is the place from where drinking water is supplied to entire Madras. Even irrigation water is supplied from here. But Swami said that, but when I saw, it didn't look like it had the capacity to slake the thirst of a city and also provide for agricultural purposes. And Swami also narrates in the discourse how he would see children drinking from small ponds and puddles, and his heart bled. You know, his heart bled. And of course, Swami also saw these ladies standing in long lines waiting for the water tankers to come. Because of all this, a resolution firmed up, Bhagwan would say that a resolution firmed up within him, in which he decided that till I supply water for agriculture and drinking purposes to the city of Madras, I will not step into the city. That is the famous vow that was taken, because of which after 1997 Bhagwan did not make any more visits to the city of Madras, which is so close to his heart, which was so endearing to him, which he had visited multiple times, driving all by himself also. Now that is the story of that. That is the story as narrated by Bhagwan about how he decided that he should provide water for Madras.
And absolutely. In fact, being from the city, I can tell you about the water problems we've had. It's unbelievable, because it's, as you read the history, you can make out. I mean, you're talking about how Bangalore suffers when there is a bad rainfall. And traditionally, the city of Chennai depends on the monsoon, which comes in the later part, I think October.
The
northeast monsoon. So that is like if the first monsoon, which starts in, I think, June, end of May, in June.
That is the southwest.
The southwest. You know, it depends on a lot of things. That has to be good. And then you have this other monsoon which comes later. And invariably, I think there was a very extended dry spell for about 2-3 years when that monsoon was failing. And that's when actually the problem was maximum. I still remember in school days. And when Swami would describe that much later in his discourses, where the rich people could afford tankers and, you know, we were all lucky being middle class and upper middle class. We all belonged to the category who could afford that water.
Oh, but you would buy water?
Right. I mean, every building had to buy water, and the tanker had to come and fill your, your overhead tank, or you would have an underground sump. You'll have to fill it and then raise the water. So as children, we all remember that. Our playing games would be abruptly stopped because the tanker would have to come and we have to make way for that. It'll fill the sump. And that would be a regular thing. And after that, you would get water supply of about half an hour a day.
Half an hour a day, that's it.
Right.
Running
water in taps.
So you
fill up and then you use that. It was there for a couple of summers. And depends on different places, of course, because the city is quite spread out. But that used to be a standard thing. And we would see that it's very, very bad when it comes to in those areas of the city where the little lower sections of the city reside, the slums and the places where it's more crowded, endless, they would have fights. You could see that on the road. And because of this, you know, the tankers coming into the city, so many accidents on the, because throughout the day you have tankers, lorries plying up and down the city. There would be congestion and there would be all kinds of problems.
No, even if you look at the other things, Prem, I mean, I'm sure that students would have had their studies affected because
absolutely.
Of this.
Absolutely. And
people would have had their working life disrupted.
Right? I mean, I still recall in some of the areas, the water tanker used to come at 2:33 in the morning.
Oh, because they have a schedule to maintain.
And they realize that they have to ensure that the congestion in the traffic is reduced. So they said that tankers come in before, day
rush starts. Oh.
So they used to come at 2:33.
So your sleep is gone.
Yeah, your sleep is gone and you'll have to, keep all your things ready at night. And I mean, I still recall some of these scenes because some of my people whom I know, young children, 3 years, 4 years, they had got wired in such a way that they would hear the honking of a tanker, and even in their sleep, they would run and pick up a bucket or a vessel and run towards the tanker because it had become so much a part of their schedule. And in the 90s, especially, is the only thing I've seen. It's been really bad. So when Swami describes the scene of how much people in Chennai are suffering, especially people who are living in slums who cannot afford water from these expensive tankers, I mean, they've really, really suffered a lot.
See, all this actually, as we already said, it goes to the root that it was not a city built on the bank of a perennial river.
Right.
And unfortunately, the place that the British landed on the beach over here, this place was called Madras Patnam, I think.
Madras Patnam.
And it was a small fishing village. And apparently the Portuguese also landed in a nearby fishing village called Sadras.
Sadras, right.
So Sadras has remained a tiny village even to this day, while Madras has grown. It is simply because the British grew and the Portuguese had to leave. It's like that. But so Madras grew
the
in
Dutch,
that.
I think. Huh? I think the Dutch had come to.
Oh,
Sadras.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. The Portuguese.
Portuguese came to Goa.
Goa, correct. Yeah. So Madras has grown in that manner. Unfortunately, it lies in what is known as a rain shadow region. A rain shadow region basically is when there are mountains. So the mountains are there. They stop the rain-bearing clouds. And therefore, there is rains on one side of the mountain. But because the mountain and hill is blocking the rain-bearing clouds and getting them to precipitate, once the clouds pass over the mountain tops, they're almost exhausted, depleted of all their supply. Therefore, the other side of the mountain gets almost nothing. It's almost like a shadow of the mountain. As long as it extends in that region, there's no rain at all. This can be famously seen in some of the photographs. If you search for rain shadow region in Tibet and Nepal areas in the Himalayas, you can see that one side is lush green, the other slope of the mountain is barren, it's almost like a desert. So that's and Madras happens to be in a rain shadow region of the southwest monsoon, which is the most important rain bearing season for most of India. And the same southwest monsoon, depending on its intensity and strength, as it crosses India, reaches the northeast, over there, because of some geography and the mountains, it turns. Right. It turns around. And it comes back after some time as the northeast monsoon. And it carries some moisture from the Bay of Bengal. And this northeast monsoon is what gives Madras its rain. But this northeast monsoon is very, very erratic. And therefore, there's no way you can even predict. At least, when we talk of cities like Bangalore and there's less rainfall, you at least know what you're in for. Oh, this time, this rains will be bad. With northeast monsoon, you can't tell anything. It is that same thing, recently, almost half the city of Madras was underwater.
Exactly. That is the point.
Erraticity.
Because when you say it's a rain shadow region, we are used to that so often because we will hear the rain is coming, it rains all around the city, but it'll not come to the city. And when it does, because of the river that you're referring to, Kosasthale Aru, which is actually a river which flows when there is good rain. So when there is no good rain for an extended period, you do the stupid thing of building houses and settlements where the river is supposed to be there. Right, that's what happens. I think that's what happens in many cities in India. And finally, when there is a good rain, as it is supposed to be, then you're right in the middle of a riverbed.
My God.
That's when you find all kinds of problems arising.
So, this is how, Madras and Chennai have been hit again and again and again. And that is when you wonder, when this is such a terrible problem. And Madras is not any other city. I mean, come on, it's a metro city. There are only four cities in India that are called metro cities. New Delhi, Bombay, Calcutta and Madras. One in each of the directions, north, east, south, west. And in the south, the metro city is Madras. Even to this day, Bangalore is not called an actual metro. Bangalore and Hyderabad are almost going to become metros, but they have not yet been given the status of metro, I think. Only Madras is a metro city, and how can you not take care of a metro city? What is the state government doing? What is the central government doing? These are questions that arise. And possibly, dear listeners, we'll take a quick little break, and on the other side of the break, we'll go into some of the things that have been attempted to actually solve this water problem for Madras at the state government level and central government level. We need to understand this to get an idea of the magnificence, the immensity and the miraculous project that Bhagwan has undertaken. But all of that after this little break. So don't go anywhere. The interesting and exciting part of the story is just unfolding.
Shivane, Omkara Priyane, Satya Rupane,
Welcome back, dear listeners. We were just talking a little about the historical water crisis that the city of Chennai has been facing. And we were talking of how when Swami was driving past the reservoir at a place called Red Hills, where historically the British had built that reservoir to get water from this seasonal river called Kosasthalayara, where from where the water was brought and stored there. And Swami had seen that, and Swami had also seen scenes of people suffering without water and drinking water from ditches and not being able to afford water, which is otherwise sold for a very expensive cost.
And then, because of, you know, as we discussed that this was a problem that had been existing from years, there have been efforts that have been made by the state and central government. In fact, there was, I think, a Bachavat Commission. That had been a committee that had been set up to actually solve, to find a solution for the problem of water shortage in Madras. And that commission came up with a finding which is summarized as that Madras would require at least 15 TMC of water. TMC is 1000 million cubic feet, and it translates into 30 million cubic meters of water, which is 1 TMC. 1 TMC is about 30 million cubic meters. Basically, if we build a wall, if we have a cube, right, which is 100 meters in length, 100 meters in height, and 100 meters in breadth, 30 such cubes, huge cubes filled with water will make 1 TMC. So 15 TMC is what Madras requires, and that was what was decided by the commission, and they said that this water can be supplied to Madras from the river Krishna. River Krishna is almost like a perennial river. Of course, it gets much more water during the monsoons, but it's pretty large river, River Krishna, and it flows through three different states. One is Maharashtra, one is Karnataka, and Andhra Pradesh.
Right.
So this commission said that it would be great if each of the states, I think this river has been dammed. In the sense dams have been built at various portions. So if each state is ready to give up 5 TMC of water, so 5 into 3, 15 TMC, if that can be supplied to Madras, the water problem can be solved. That is what was said. That is what the commission came out with. But as it happens many times, especially in India, it's not easy. Coming up with a decision is one thing. Implementing is a totally different ball game. So though these suggestions were given and this was what was recommended, nothing happened beyond that. it went on like this, reeling under the onslaught of droughts. The Veeranam project was floated by the Tamil Nadu government, in which they proposed to get water from the river Kaveri. And years later, it just was gone without a whimper. And even to this day, I think problem with Kaveri continues, right? So that also went off. It was in 1983 that finally, you know, it needed some movie style kind of action, I think, because the two chief ministers of the states of Andhra Pradesh and Tamil Nadu were both cine heroes.
And not stars of their own states.
Yes, super stars. And one was N.T. Rama Rao for Andhra Pradesh, the founder, I think, of the Telugu Desam Party.
Right.
And the other was M.G. Ramachandran.
Again,
from
the founder
Tamil Nadu.
Of the ADMK party. Right?
ADMK party, which has split up and...
Right.
Today. Anyway, so these were the two people who decided that we should solve this problem, and they came together in 1983 and decided to implement getting waters of River Krishna to Madras. And at that time it made sense, because I think NTR, the chief minister of Andhra Pradesh, had embarked on a very ambitious Telugu Ganga project. Telugu Ganga is a perennial river that never goes dry. So in Indian parlance, Ganga is often used to imply a never-ending stream. So Telugu Ganga is a never-ending stream in the Telugu land. So where he wanted to supply waters from River Krishna to all around the state, especially in these regions, Anantapur, the Rayalaseema region, which is evident that he could not, because Swami had to come up with his water project. Anyway, so he wanted to do this Telugu Ganga project, and he was ready to extend this canal, Telugu Ganga canal, up to the Andhra Pradesh-Tamil Nadu border to supply water for Tamil Nadu. And in exchange, MGR was ready to cough up, if I can use that term, cough up a hefty sum of, I think, 500 crores.
Right.
So that was the agreement they came upon, and so there the agreement was signed. This project was launched in the presence of the then Prime Minister of India, Indira Gandhi. It was launched on the 25th of May, 1983. The decision was to build a canal from the Kandaleru Reservoir in Andhra Pradesh up to the border, Andhra-Tamil Nadu border, from where Tamil Nadu would dig its own canal of 25 kilometers, leading it
Pundi,
to its reservoir.
Right, to Pundi. A place called Pundi. So it was essentially the Kandaleru Pundi canal.
That had to be built.
Right.
What was shocking is, Prem, you know, when you go through history, you realize that this was signed in May 1983, and the canal was declared open by Chandrababu Naidu, the chief minister of Andhra Pradesh at that time, in September 1996, 13 years to dig a canal.
Right. I mean, this is like 13 years it took to make the canal, and of course...
This is after 13 years it took to decide to make the canal.
Right. There was much fanfare when the canal was launched, the building of the canal was started, and there was much fanfare when it was declared that the canal is ready and the water can flow now. But unfortunately, even after that, hardly any water flowed, because after 13 years, the canal which was actually dug was so under par and so poor in its infrastructure that in spite of having the canal dug, the water which was released from Kandaleru Reservoir in Andhra Pradesh did not reach even the zero point where the two states meet, because it was so badly made that much of the water was lost in seepage
and evaporation,
and even some of the walls of the canal in some places were being breached because they're not built properly, so the water starts flowing into the fields and into
flooding there.
Right.
After 13 years, what they found out was the idea was Madras needed 15 TMC, and the experts came and calculated and said that it's impossible to have 100% efficient transfer. So when you transfer 15 TMC, be aware, be alert that only 12 TMC will reach Madras. So Madras, thirsty Madras, was waiting for its 12 TMC. And at its peak functioning, they found out that at the max, about 3 to 4 TMC was actually reaching Madras. So you see, you build a canal costing 500 crores, which takes 13 years, and finally release 15 TMC of precious water, and out of that, 75% is being wasted. What a pain it should have been. What a humongous waste of taxpayer money. I mean, this is what happens when there is lack of professionalism, when there is corruption.
And the solution is there, you know, when we look at some of these natural disasters or the natural problems that we face, it's very easy for us to say that, oh, God has put us in a place where it is like this and it's arid and there's no rain. But, you know, when you look at this, it is so obvious there is a solution available in a country like India where there, you know, so many rivers flowing, there's so much, it's rich with natural resources. The solution is right in front of you and you've also started working on the solution, but it's purely man's greed and man's inefficiency, which is caused by greed and, you know, is selfishness, which has actually led to this. We have no right to blame God because God has given us everything. He's even given us the intelligence to come up with a plan like this, but then we botch it up with our selfishness.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's a side note, but I feel it's a very, very important note that even as we are discussing the scarcity of water, the drying up of water in Tamil Nadu generally and especially in Madras, I remember a discourse that Swami delivered on the Tamil New Year Day in 2002, if I am not mistaken, 2002 or 2003 or 2001, one of these 3 years, in which Swami referred to the great bhakti movement in Tamil Nadu. He spoke about how devotion flourished and devotion was fed by Tamil Nadu. And in that same discourse, Swami was sad, feeling hurt, feeling bad that the waters of that devotion has dried up. Swami was speaking about how the land which is supposed to be the generator of devotion is now actually becoming atheistic. He lamented that. I feel it is very symbolic and metaphorical that as Bhagwan decided to send waters to Madras, the center, the heart center of Tamil Nadu, I am sure that that would be the carrier of the waters of bhakti and devotion also to the same city and state.
Absolutely. And going back to the same thing which you were talking about, it's very easy to blame God for the problems that you have when He has given the solutions and we're not looking at it. I think typically the same thing happens even in, you know, any kingdom or any city or any establishment where people turn atheistic. When there are solutions in front of you, when God has given you everything, you begin to blame God and devotion towards God for all your problems. That's like fixing the problem at exactly where it does not belong. I think that's what happened even in the state of Tamil Nadu, where people started pointing out at the mistakes of the administration instead of fixing the inefficiencies where it belongs. They said it's because of, you know, the caste system, it's because of the Brahminism which is there, the devotion which is there. These are all the things which are responsible.
And for all that, God is responsible.
And God is responsible. And en masse, you kind of inspire this this idea of atheism. And it's a movement actually anti-establishment and questioning the inefficiencies of the system. But, you know, you feed it with this idea of atheism and the idea of communist thought, of agnostic beliefs. And that's what happened in Tamil Nadu also.
It's amazing that in a country like India, which is supposed to be the birthplace of 33 crore gods, you know, all religions find their harmony here. Every religion has some connection to India. Buddhism is connected to India. Jainism is connected to India. There are legends and stories of how Jesus spent time in India. Guru Nanak is from India. You know, it is a seedbed for every religion in the world. And in such a country, you have a state which is officially atheistic. I mean, that's what happened to Tamil Nadu. In spite of all the bhakti movement and everything, if we look at the last 4 decades, it has been ruled by parties who proclaim and are proud to be atheistic. In fact, I don't know, I had read in some place that during the heights of such anti-God movements, garlands of slippers and such insulting things were made for the idols of deities and paraded in the public, you know. It must have been such a blow to religious sentiments and people's feelings. But at the same time, the very fact that nobody was rising up against it showed that the bad were bad, but possibly the good were not good enough, because even their hearts had begun to dry up because of the lack of bhakti possibly.
And absolutely. I mean, the beauty is, if you look at it, we are not here to talk about politics, but if you really look at it in India itself, some of the states which are known for their religious fervor have been the ones to really be the basis for the other approach also. You have Kerala, which is God's own country, which has been ruled by communists for so long. You have West Bengal, which is known for its, you know, worship of Mother, worship of Kali. You have, it's given Durga birth to Puja. Vivekananda, it's been to Ramakrishna Paramahamsa.
Yes.
But we know how long the communists have ruled there. You have Kashmir, which is supposed to be our, you know, it's like the most fertile place for the play, where Vedanta was studied and Vedanta was propagated from, you know, the...
In fact, when they say about Jesus being in India, it is supposed to be in Kashmir itself.
Right, because many of the great pundits have been from Kashmir. That's why all the way from Kerala, Adi Shankara thought it befitting to go to Kashmir. And we know what is happening in that place. I think that itself is a message where, as Swami would say, the tree which has maximum fruits will be the one which invites the stone pelting, and that's what is happening to all our, I think, as people who wish to be practicing good, who wish to be walking the path which Swami showed us, I think we should be mentally prepared for this. It is not for us to say that, oh, why are people being persecuted in the name of religion? Why are people who are devoted being put through suffering? I think that is the pattern in which things happen too. And that's precisely what happened to Tamil Nadu and what Swami was saying, that here the not only the waters and the rivers are drying up, but the bhakti in the hearts of people are drying up because of all of these movements.
Though I cannot comprehensively prove it, it's just my feeling that one is the cause, the other is a symptom. It's almost, this Swami has mentioned in many discourses also, that natural calamities are just symptoms of a deeper underlying problem, you know, where man is being untrue in his worship of God. And there also Swami clarifies when he says, what is meant by worship of God? Worship of God doesn't mean sitting and offering flowers to a stone or an idol or anything like that. Swami would say that you must be able to see the divinity that is prevalent everywhere. That is how Swami gave us the Vyashti, Samashti, Srishti and Parameshti hierarchy, where he said that individual is a part of society, society is a part of nature, nature is part of God, and God permeates through everything. Therefore, you must be able to see God at an individual level, you must be able to see God in society, you must be able to see God in nature, and then alone will you have the Vishwarupa Darshan of Paramatma, the Parameshti. When there is a link missing in any of this, you are not having true darshan. So that is what I mean. That is what I mean by saying devotion to God is gone. Devotion to God means when we fail to see divinity present everywhere. That is the root cause for all the problems, which also manifests as natural calamities. Because whether it is problem in samashti, that is society, whether it's problem in nature, that is srishti, or at an individual level, in terms of psychological problems, mental problems, all this coming up. You know, our medicine has evolved so much, but how much more have diseases evolved? They have also evolved from the gross to the subtle. Before, you could take two pills and get rid of ills. Now, pills are not able to get rid of ills because these ills are so deep-rooted. That is how it is. That is how it is the root cause, and these are just the symptoms. I think while Swami gave his healing touch to the symptoms, he also provided nourishment in a manner that the root cause also would get solved through this Madras Water Project.
Right, and the beauty of, if you look at India itself, I think that is what Swami would speak about. You know, in this land, there's always that seed of devotion somewhere. It appears like, you know, when you have a dry spell, Swami would say that it looks like the land is barren, but the first rain you would find that there would be sprouting because the seed is always there. I think that can be said about India, because even now if you go to any of the corners of the country, yes, there is a lot of all the problems we speak about, but in the middle of all that, that love for God is still there. As Swami would say, people who are attached to God are Bharatiyas in the real sense.
I think Bharati, yes. Right, Bha means Bhagwan, Rati means one who has love and one who is attached to.
Right, and that is so true about any place in India. And that is what has happened in Swami's presence itself. You know, when Swami used to travel the width and breadth of this country, I think that's what he did. He literally woke up that seed which is waiting for that first shower. It happened all through. And it's so very beautiful for us to look at all of that when Swami traveled to Chandigarh, when Swami traveled to the different towns and villages in Andhra Pradesh and, you know, Karnataka, Kerala, which Swami traveled so extensively. It's really a resurgence of that belief in God. And I think in many ways, what this entire drama of the Chennai Water Project achieved, which concluded in what we will be talking towards the end of this discussion, the citizens' conclave which happened in Chennai as a thanksgiving to Swami. It really was a turnaround of whatever we are speaking about, what happened as a run-up to this water crisis.
Absolutely. So, till now, dear listeners, we have described the conditions and what happened and how Swami resolved. In fact, when Swami had this resolution, that is the time when, I think, Brother Sudhindran's incident you narrated, that was the time when he must have been doing his third undergraduate, because I know it because he is 3 years senior to me. And so around that time, when this resolution was there in Bhagwan's heart that I will not step into Madras before I give water to it. At that time, water project in Medak and Mahbub Nagar is on. And at the same time, if we see in a year or two from then, Bhagwan would be inaugurating the Sri Satya Institute of Higher Medical Sciences at Bangalore. So that's why I say that it's not like we can see this one story in isolation. It's because Bhagwan never did things one at a time. It was the unfolding of the master plan, and simultaneously multiple things would be happening. Now when we look at it, when we think of only the Chennai Water Project, we see a kind of timeline. But if we are able to juxtapose this timeline onto the timeline of other projects, we realize, oh my God, what a thing it was. You just imagine, you have created the world's largest free drinking water supply project in Anandpur district. And years after that, you're working on extending that to Medak and Mahbub Nagar. Even as you do that, you're planning for a replica of another of world's first kind. You know, I think the super speciality hospital at Prashanthi Nilayam was again the first of its kind in the world, and possibly even to this day, it has only one more of its kind in the world, which is in Bangalore. And that was the one that was being planned by Bhagwan. And at that time, he has resolved to supply drinking water to Madras. One can only imagine the kind of, it's only possible for divinity to do that. And the way the Chennai project was announced, oh my God, that also was so magnificent. I think it happened during the first anniversary celebrations of the super speciality hospital in Bangalore. It was the 1 year completion of the hospital. It had completed multiple surgeries in cardiology and neurology. This hospital had been opened the previous year by the Prime Minister of the nation, and this was a moment possibly any normal human would just sit back and soak in the magnificent work being done, but not Swami.
Absolutely. Going back to the inauguration of the hospital itself, I recall one thing which Swami had told. We were all students when that thing was happening, and Swami was very clear that when the hospital was being inaugurated, there should be patients already ready for treatment there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, going back to how the Pundi Kandaliru was done, you know, when you have a thought, you have an inauguration. It's almost like that. And even after 13 years, you have not delivered what you promised. But with Swami, he's saying that when I inaugurated, there should be patients already admitted. And when the inauguration is done, when the Prime Minister comes, he should see patients being treated in the hospital.
It should not be an empty building.
It should not be an empty building. And that's exactly what happened, because in the central hall when the inauguration was happening, in the corridors around on top in the first and second floor, actually the patients were standing and seeing the inauguration.
What is happening? Yes, they were watching the inauguration. I also remember, I think the Parthi Hospital, the day of inauguration itself, four surgeries were conducted. Four surgeries on the day of inauguration. It's really mind-blowing, it's amazing and fantastic. And what is more fantastic is how, even as everyone was celebrating the first year anniversary, Bhagwan out of the blue came up with the Madras project, you know, apparently out of the blue. That is a phenomenal beginning. That was like the kickstart to this project, and the way this project progressed, the things that happened, they're all phenomenal, dear listeners. That is the reason why we have kept aside another week of our afternoon satsang to go into that. We hope you have been enjoying this story so far, because it is at this point that we will be stopping the story. How did Swami go about this whole thing? How did he kickstart this project, and how did it meet fruition? And remember, as we said, this is not just about supplying water to Chennai. It's also about nourishing that entire region with bhakti, for which it has been very famous and known for from ages. All of these things achieved in one master stroke by our beloved master, and that story will be waiting to be unfolded the next Thursday when we meet for afternoon satsang. So do write to us about how you feel about this, or if you have any thoughts, or if you have any experiences especially associated with this, because we'll definitely share it in the next satsang. Otherwise, be there with us next week as we go through this exciting, thrilling and beautiful story of how Bhagwan came up and executed the water project to Madras, the Satya Sai Ganga. On that note, dear listeners, we will take leave. We will leave you with a song, on the other side of which, as always, you'll be greeted by Brother Chandu with his segment, Love to Love.
இறைவா உன் கண்களில் உயிர் யாவும் ஒன்றுதான் அலையாடும் சித்ராவதி Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
You are listening to Radio Sai Thursday Live. Stay tuned.